Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 1st of October, and we're very happy to have you with us. Hopefully you had a lovely weekend and it was a busy one, or you just relaxed and did nothing as you planned, or maybe you worked all weekend and you're telling me to shut up right now. Whatever the case, I hope you're happy now. Good morning and welcome. Let me introduce everybody to you and we'll get started. Libby Post is here, a political consultant, our Monday regular. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice.
Thank you.
You still sound crappy.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joe. It's been 6 weeks, but I'm I'm going to see the head man today.
Excellent.
The head throat guy, so hopefully.
All right. Well, good luck.
We'll figure this out.
All right. Well, you still sound great on the radio. That's all that cares. It gives a gravitas. A little Brenda Vaccaro, but it's good.
Oh, thank you so much. People have been saying to me, what's wrong with you? I'm getting these emails from people. You keep coughing. What's wrong?
Oh, no.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Joe Bonilla is...
sitting next to Libby.
Yes.
I'm not contagious.
I believe you.
I'm not contagious.
Yeah.
That's what they always say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
If that were the case, we all would have died 3 weeks ago.
That's right. That's exactly it.
Joe Bonilla is here, a communications consultant. Joe, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Thank you very much. Sarah Rogerson was here with us on Friday to figure out... Oh, what the hell was happening in the world? This was Libby and is back this morning, and we're quite happy about that. And good morning, Sarah. Thank you very much for being with us, an Albany Law School professor as well as director of the Immigration Law Clinic.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. And look who is back. Alan Chartok has returned. He is here, and we are more than a little excited. Good morning, Alan.
It's very nice of you, Joe. We were, Roselle and I, of course, were 6 hours ahead. We could not turn the television off in our hotel room in Bologna. We were up till 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, it wasn't like they wouldn't let you turn it off they do in some countries.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, we watched until the very end. It was the most alarming thing I've ever seen. I was talking to my son yesterday, who is of course nonpartisan, and who announced gee, Dad, we're really, and then he used the word, which we don't use on the radio, but let's just say screwed.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, so that's a good kickoff, because when we met on Friday for our panel, we were talking about what, of course, happened on Thursday. And what happened on Thursday was the testimony by both Brett Kavanaugh as well as Dr. Blasey Ford. Now, the vote was supposed to happen in the morning. They put it to the afternoon. And then that was the strangest thing I have seen. I am only happy that we ran that live, because it was, we thought it was just going to be a procedural vote and we'd be out.
Oh,
but
my God,
it became dramatic and weird, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was very weird. And we now have an investigation going on, and part of the... Many of the stories that we will talk about this morning have to do with what the scope of this investigation is. There does seem to be some confusion over the limits of the FBI sexual assault investigation. The FBI investigation, meant to defuse the explosive conflict over Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, sparked a new round of partisan combat Sunday as the White House appeared to retain sharp limits on the probe, even as President Trump and Republican officials publicly suggested otherwise. Two Trump administration officials said Sunday that the White House had not placed any limits on the FBI investigation into claims of sexual assault leveled against Kavanaugh, but was also opposed to a fishing expedition that could take a broader look at Kavanaugh's credibility and behavior. The statements made by Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Presidential Counselor Kellyanne Conway in TV interviews followed reports that federal investigators are pursuing allegations made by two women, but not a third, who signed a sworn affidavit accusing Kavanaugh of sexually aggressive behavior and being present at parties where gang rapes occurred. The confusion, from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm off on this, the confusion and the controversy seems to come in. There are many on the Senator Coons being the leader of this, I think, of saying that we really want to look at have them look at some of the statements regarding his drinking And the fact of the level of his drinking during high school and college, to which some have stated on the Republican side that is beyond the scope of the FBI investigation.
Senator Coons actually went on the record to talk about what happened in those moments with Jeff Flake. And it is, they ended up in a phone booth together.
Yes.
Where, and apparently the night before, Senator Coons sent an impassioned plea to Senator Flake, saying, you know, I really am disappointed in what in the direction I think that you're taking this, and I really implore you, as a man of faith, I think that, I mean, they brought it all out. And then in the phone booth, it's my understanding that Flake was expressing some remorse about his earlier decisions earlier in the day, sort of coming out and indicating that he would be voting in favor. So that dynamic and that relationship, it's sort of like a shining moment in all of this, because it makes me believe that those real conversations, it was like a glimmer of what we hope statesmen would be in those moments. And then it's my understanding, based on Senator Coons recounting this, that he left the phone booth so that Flake could speak with Rod Rosenstein in order to talk about what the FBI investigation would involve. I mean, just think, this is high drama. I can't even imagine. And then all their colleagues flooded them.
And high drama.
And he kicked them all out.
That you don't see anymore, because these were a Republican and a Democrat in this highly partisan situation that we're in now. They don't talk to each other, but Flake had a moment of conscience. And he said on 60 Minutes last night that if he was running for office, he never would have done this.
Yeah, which he is just very honest.
Which just speaks to this notion of get real. The two rules for any elected official is get elected and reelected. And so, you know, I thought that was, who taught me that?
Yeah.
Shirley Gordon, actually. I give all my credit to Shirley Gordon. But anyway, you know, it was really, it was startling. And that the two of them were on 60 Minutes together talking about this. It all remains to be seen what ends up happening. You know, some people say the FBI is going to wrap it up by the end of the day, which is ridiculous. I mean, how can they actually do a good job?
Well, look, the whole thing is infuriating. I mean, it's really infuriating. The idea that the White House, first of all, is lying about what the limits that they've put on the FBI are. And we know that they're told who they can talk to, who they can't talk to. This is really bad stuff. And my question is, how many of the people, not on the Republican side, not necessarily on the Democratic side, but in the middle, are watching all of this and saying, this isn't fair. This isn't the way you're supposed to be doing this. Who do they think they're kidding when they do this kind of thing, as if they're talking down to us and they're telling us that they're not doing one thing and another? Well, I'm you know, really truly believing that Mitch McConnell will do anything in his power to get this guy through. Mitch McConnell, to me, is the bad guy in all of this, because McConnell wants this done. And he thinks that's going to be his legacy. And once it's done, I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see him say, bye-bye
now. Right.
Put me in the history books.
And women's truth be damned.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and just to back up real quick to what you were saying, Alan, as far as the time. Well, I lost my thought. Go ahead. Go ahead. I lost my train.
Well, it was interesting over the weekend that former FBI Director James Comey did come out with an op-ed in the New York Times saying that he still believed in, obviously, the career rank-and-file FBI agents to actually come through and actually investigate this in the proper amount of time.
Oh, that was it. The fact that what you were saying, thank you, Joe.
Of course.
But you were talking about putting the reins on the FBI investigation. But this is after the whole farce during all of the hearings in which they were saying there couldn't be an FBI investigation.
Yeah.
Right.
No, there's no question about it that we have to find out who the FBI will be reporting to, for example. If they report to the man who told them what to do, the president of the United States, we may never hear about it. If we hear about it, it must be a bunch of lies, because this guy just lies through his teeth all the time. You just don't know what you're going to get. What we do know is how terrible this is.
Don't you think, Sarah? Though, I mean, if whatever happens happens, obviously, but mm-hmm. a week to look a little bit more into this guy and his behavior in any way, shape, or form seems like a good thing.
Or even just to assess his testimony. I mean, looking at the lies that he told, including insinuating that he had no connections to Yale, and it turns out he's a legacy. His grandfather was a graduate. And then just a host of all others. Somebody put together a great visual of the number of times that Professor Ford, Dr. Ford, answered a question directly. And then the number of occurrences where Kavanaugh dodged a question, mm-hmm. and the number of times that he answered correctly, and I think the correct answers were blue, and the fibs were red. It was just like a sea of red for him.
Well, you know, Roselle, my wife, got into a little bit of a tiff with a lady because Roselle posted the Saturday Night Live thing,
which was brilliant,
right? And this lady said, no, there's nothing funny about any of this. So then the question, right. Lucas, make a face for those of you who don't.
No, rolling
well,
my eyes.
And Matt Damon, I mean, was a controversial in the Me Too movement, trying to mansplain.
Right.
You know, so that was a career redeeming choice, I guess.
It could
but
be.
He was great.
Possibly.
Partially career redeeming.
However, he was spot on.
He really was.
Going from 11 to 15. Yeah.
Yes.
So
right.
Then the question is it appropriate to have this kind of humor to the American people? I've always said that what you get on Saturday Night Live is closer to the truth than what you get on the network programming, because you know they tell the truth and
it was a parody of what happened.
Yeah.
Without talking about the sexual violence, it was more about the calendars and the boasting and his behavior. And his frat boy behavior.
Right,
so.
And you know, and what came out in today, I guess yesterday and now today, this guy Charles Ludington, who was a former varsity basketball player and a friend of Kavanaugh's, you know, just totally refuted Kavanaugh's. I just had a few drinks, or I liked beer, but I never got so drunk that I blacked out.
Now,
what about you?
He's stumbling every time I saw him.
Right, yeah. It was really something.
So was it the Princess Bride? Everybody always corrects me. Was it? He's lying.
Yes.
Well. And Ludington, I believe, has a date with the FBI.
Yes,
am I correct
does.
On that?
Yep.
So that is that will be interesting to see what comes out of that. But he didn't
want to answer the question, Joe. So in other words, they say, were you falling down drunk? Did you ever do this? Well, were you?
I know.
Weird deflection at that point. Yeah.
That was so bizarre. And for Jeff Flake last night to say, well, I would have been angry, too. Giving him a pass on his behavior was despicable.
The other one who's interesting to watch here, I'm sorry for interrupting, is Lindsey Graham.
You think?
Oh, God.
Now, he must have had 1 million anti-telegrams, if they still send telegrams, whatever they do, during that thing. So then you say to yourself, okay, so the next thing we hear about from Lindsey Graham is, I believe Jeff Flake is a good man, and he's just trying to make America whole again. In other words, he was doubling back.
Well, I want to be Attorney General is really what his message is.
I thought the same thing, Alan, because at that 60 Minutes interview, he didn't say anything. They had him on 60 Minutes, and he really didn't say anything. He was saying that this is bad for the process, but they showed that clip, and he was unglued.
He really was. Yeah. And Kate McKinnon.
As well he should have been.
Yeah. And Kate McKinnon's portrayal of him was
spot.
Really
she was
great.
Yeah.
She can do
just
anyone
fantastic.
At any time.
She's a national treasure.
She did with their hand and the bringing in the arm was just insanely good. All right. One more question and then we'll take a break and then we'll come back and we'll go to letters. But when we think about the time frame here, this is a procedural question I don't know the answer to. So the FBI comes back, they presumably give the report to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and then do they have to call everybody back, or can they just make the decisions based on the report? Or do there have to be another round of hearings, or could there be another round of hearings?
Yeah, they're going to go right to the vote.
Also report to the White House, too. Mm-hmm. So.
They're going to go to the vote. you know, he's got it set up so that there's going to be a vote. And if they have...
But wouldn't Democrats want to ask? I would think everybody would want to ask
questions.
Well,
of course
again.
They would want to, but they're not going to get a chance to. They're going to go to the vote. The leader is going to say, we're going to vote. And they will do it if they have the votes. So now you look at Susan Collins, who I really have grave doubts about at this stage of the game. And you look at some of these other folks.
Well, Lisa Murkowski, the governor of Alaska, put out a statement this morning about not supporting Kavanaugh. That the great state of Alaska does not support him for the Supreme Court.
More important than the investigation is the pressure that will be put on these key votes in the next week. I mean, maybe it's as important. And then depending on what that report says, the big if is if they have the votes.
Yeah, they won't have the vote if they haven't got the vote, if they haven't got them.
Right.
Although I've heard distinguished political analysts, I think Tobin, but I may be wrong about that, saying they have to have a vote no matter what to satisfy, you know, the right, the political right. It was this morning, and I may have gotten the name wrong.
But it could be a committee vote, right?
I think the committee, they're done with the committee. And by the way, Joe, I know how important this is, but the one thing we haven't mentioned this morning is that lockbox.
Oh my God, we haven't. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll remind people when we'll do a whole lockbox feast when we come back. In the meantime, you can beat us to the punch and go to WAMC.org, and then in the meantime, we'll get you numbers too, and we'll talk about all that after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Joe Bonilla, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. We love your letters, so you can write to us at panel@wamc.org. We have work to do regarding our lockbox, and the fund drive starts 2 weeks from today. Believe it or not, it is October 15th, so we have 2 weeks from today. Our goal for the lockbox, don't forget the total goal is $1 million, but our lockbox goal is $500,000, and we currently are at $193,988.
So there's good news and there's bad news. We're running a little behind, there's no question. But if you love this program, and if you're dedicated to it, and if you're one of those people who stop me and say, I listen all the time, I would never miss it, or I do love it, and now we really need your help. I mean, it's that simple. We just can't do this without you. So, and it's so simple. You go to WAMC.org on your computer or on your iPhone, and you put the money in, and even if it's $5 or $1,000, whatever you can do. You want to make a challenge, that would be great. But whatever you can do, please do it now. It is so important that we keep this thing going, that we don't let the light go out, because, folks, it could happen. And we'll be here till the end, till, as Joe just said, till we have $1 million. But the lockbox is so important. What an innovation. It means that we can really move ahead.
Also, just to further your point, Alan, of the fact that every dollar we put in now obviously shortens the drive. Think of what's going on right now in our world and the fact that we have all this happening. We have the midterm elections coming. This will be 2 weeks before those elections when the fund drive ends. We want to keep it a very short fund drive so you can get all the stuff that you so desperately need. Not only who knows what is going to happen over the next week and a half regarding the Kavanaugh nomination, much less everything else that's going on politically.
I'm about to do something that you're going to give me a look about.
Well, but I love a look.
But we have had a couple of people, maybe two, who have written letters saying, how dare you discuss the lockbox when it's not the fund drive itself? Well, look, folks.
That's why you do the lockbox.
That is why we do it. There's always a meanie. And
yeah, I wouldn't give you a look. I'd give them a look.
Okay. No.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like that.
I would give them a look. I wouldn't give you a look.
It's just so. People who really need an excuse. You know, my twin brother Lewis always used to say, he was a great not-for-profit administrator. He used to say, there are 10,000 reasons not to give, and you found yours. WAMC.org, you'll find your reason to give.
That's right.
That's right. And that reason may be simply you it's your time and you know you want to do it and it's whatever you can do. We still have a few tickets left for Capital Steps. I think we're more than two-thirds of the way through, and that's a large venue, and we will sell that out. So if you want your tickets, it's a good time to get them now. That's Friday, November 9th.
When is that?
No. Thank you. Friday, November 9th, and just a few days after the midterms. And so you can give a one-time gift. You can give a monthly gift. You can do whatever works for you. We will work with you.
We will, and it is so, it's just so extraordinarily important that we keep it going.
And don't forget, early on in this administration, there were talks of defunding public radio stations, and everyone had to pull out those old films of Fred Rogers giving congressional testimony about why public radio is so important, not just for us, but for our kids, too.
But what's so important here is that this community and this listening area understands that threat, and they support this station, which is a wonderful thing.
And by the way, for whatever it's worth, we really do try to maintain our critical ability, not only with Trump. I hate to say the
T word,
the office word. In other words, with President Trump, but we do with the state government. There's a great deal going on in state government that is reprehensible in terms of corruption, things like that. We've been all over that. And we will continue to do that. Not always pleasant, but then that's what it is.
It's your public radio station, and these are your programs, and you have to do your part. So it's as simple as that. WAMC.org, WAMC.org, if you would like to call. That's okay. It's 1-800-323-9262.
But let me just say one thing. You say you have to do your part. Nobody has to do anything. That's the great part about this. It's only because you want to. We can't tax you. We can't reach out through the telephone and tell you, you know, you owe us this money and we're going to put you in jail if you don't do it. And this is, you say it's your public radio station, but everywhere I go, people say they've lived all around the country and they've never heard anything like this before. So
WAMC.org, WAMC.org. All right, we have letters, Alan. Let's go to those.
Thank you, Joe. Ron says, Kavanaugh, he lied repeatedly while being questioned by the Senate panel, which is a crime, correct? I'm going to go to our Sarah, who is going to tell us whether it is or not. He lied about stupid things, Devil's Triangle, boofing, drinking, even if you don't believe he assaulted Dr. Ford. How is he even still being considered? Thanks for everything. And that's Aishu in Cairo. And let me just say, that's a very good point, isn't it? The idea that his demeanor was so bad. He was following Trump's orders, by the way. Trump said, you got to get out there and you got to really fight.
He was incredibly partisan.
Yeah. Well, not only partisan, but he was the opposite of what a judicial person with some equanimity ought to be.
He was acting like a predator.
He was.
Yeah. Yes.
And I mean, we have to be reminded, though, that these are civil proceedings. These aren't criminal proceedings.
No.
And so it's up to the Senate Judiciary Committee to think about whether it's hard to put this in the category of perjury, right?
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, because it's all around the margins, just like everything else with this administration. That's where they function. That's the sweet spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can, he could make an argument that he misspoke, or you know, that he was trying to articulate that he was under a lot of pressure, right? I could think of like 50 different ways for him to say, you know, that's not what I meant to say, and I'll correct the record.
But he was under oath.
He was under oath, and that's. And that should be taken seriously. And at the very least, it should disqualify him from being an officer of the court, which is what judges and lawyers are.
We put people in jail for perjury all the time.
Well, it was at the end of that 60 Minutes interview, they said to both Coons and Flake, he should be disqualified if he's found to be lying to if he was found to be lying to the committee. Mm-hmm. And they both said yes.
But we pretty well know he was
that
lying,
he lied to the committee.
No, it's right there. Yeah,
right. You
in
know,
black and white. The
notion of sober as a judge has just been thrown out. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and he has. He did lie, and people are gonna more people are gonna come out of the woodwork. I mean, we have this one guy who used to go to school with him. You know, if you went to a job interview, which was this ostensibly was, lied and cried and acted the way you did, would you get the job?
No.
Yeah, right. So
have we ever had one? I don't think we've ever had one here at WMC. We've had some pretty interesting interviews over the years, but I don't think we've ever had anybody who cried in the interview.
No, maybe afterwards.
Cried or yelled.
Yeah, right.
I cried the other day.
Not that there's anything wrong with crying.
No. I was going to say.
Or men crying.
I cried. I was just about to say, because the Legislative Gazette had its 40th reunion, 40th right. anniversary. And I went, and that's why we had to run home from Bologna and get this thing done. And in the middle of it, inexplicably, all of a sudden, the tears were coming out of my eyes. It was really... was really something.
I ran into Ann Erickson yesterday, yeah. and she said it was a lovely event.
She did all the work.
Yeah.
She was great. She and her friends did the work.
Ann Erickson makes me cry all the time.
In a good way?
Because she's so lovely. Yes.
She's the best. She's the best. And Ron says, we did that already. Thank you. Sorry about that. And Anonymous, Russ from Greenfield says, the public owes a debt of gratitude to the courageous, forthright, and unrelenting women who stopped Jeff Flake's elevator and gave him the opportunity to say something about his decision to vote to approve Brett Kavanaugh. And instead, he chose to shame himself by saying nothing on mic and camera to the world. Even if Kavanaugh is confirmed, maybe those women should be considered for the Nobel Peace Prize.
We were just talking about that at the break. That was pretty remarkable. And Senator Coons may not have been as persuasive if they hadn't done what they did.
Well, we're going to be debating Flake for a long time. Sarah and I just had a little bit of a debate. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, he's the guy who got the FBI investigation going here.
Right.
And I think he deserves some credit. I loved what Joe said before about his, it was on 60 Minutes, which I didn't see, assertion that he could not have had done that if he was running for office.
Right.
And that tells you more about our political class mm-hmm. than anything else you could possibly believe. So I'm willing to give him a break, you know.
Further Sarah's point, he didn't have to vote for it to move through to the floor either.
Exactly.
I mean, he could have voted.
Yeah. Right.
He could have voted against it before he moved it.
Well, those
women
may have been the intervening event. No question about it.
Yeah. You know, the fact that he couldn't say anything to these women, I don't know if there are many.
I don't know about that, Libby.
What?
Go ahead.
You don't even know what I was going to say.
No, go ahead.
No, we will.
We
talked about it Friday, but go ahead.
Okay. I don't know if there are many men in his station in the world who would be able to say anything. I think that he felt like there is probably nothing that I can say here that's going to make these women feel any better, because I think that's where he went. What can I do to make these women feel better? And clearly there wasn't anything. He sort of recognized what they were saying. He did in some way validate what he was saying, and then he went on to validate what he was saying, what they said, with his actions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have to give him, like you, Alan, some credit for doing that. But it remains to be seen whether or not he'll vote for him on the Senate floor.
Absolutely. So who knows? I mean, we've often been told he wants to run for president. And, you know, he may be examining those options right now. But the picture of one's mom or sister or daughters has to come up as you are doing. You know, there's a difference between right and wrong. He knows what right is here.
The other thing, too, though, is to Libby, is that he wouldn't have the women would not have gone after him in the elevator had he not just announced that he was going to vote it through.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, that was what made it so compelling, because the news had just broken that he was going to support.
You could see the pain on this man's face.
Yeah.
You definitely could.
Well, let's go on. Alan says FBI and Kavanaugh. Panel, the good news is that if the reports come back thin or obviously doctored. The swing voters should also recognize this and vote no, maybe.
Well, that's the only thing that will come out will be a summary report by the FBI. Yeah. It won't be anything in detail.
You're not going to know. Not when the president has said to the FBI, here's what you do, and here's how you do it, and here's who you speak to, and here's who you don't speak to. That's simple. And Rhonda says, Lindsey Graham, his act was the shiny object we watched while they magically made the prosecutor disappear. That was amazing. I saw it. I was watching it, and I couldn't believe that. They said, well, you know, Graham wants to say something. And then she was gone.
And then Edie Bryant's portrayal of her on Saturday Night Live was like, I went on Southwest for this. Right. I mean, it was really funny.
Give me the small and desk, the whole
right,
thing.
Right, right. I've got 4,000 pieces of paper on this baby desk.
They must have really hammered her because this morning she's out, apparently, with a statement saying, you know, taking the Republican side on this.
Taking the Republican side?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see that one.
Okay. Yeah, she's saying that she wouldn't have been able to prosecute this this attack because there's not enough evidence there. It's basically undoing testimony as evidence.
Wow.
Which is...
You can do one more and we'll take a break and then we'll come back.
Okay, here we go. Trump needs Kavanaugh for upcoming Supreme Court case, says Mary. The rush to confirm Kavanaugh is directly related to an upcoming case next month before the Supreme Court, Gamble versus the United States. They will need Kavanaugh's vote. Simply stated, it concerns a ruling that denies state convictions relating to federal issues. It is based on double jeopardy protections. Once done, it will give the president power to override any criminal conviction ruled by New York State against the Trump family in particular. In other words, New York's rulings against Manafort, Cohen, and of course, ultimately, Mr. Trump will be void, and Mueller's hard work will dissolve into nothing. And that's from Mary.
We should note that it is the first Monday in October, so the Supreme Court, as it is now, begins their session. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue with letters. We'll talk about other topics as well. Don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Joe Bonilla, and Libby Post. Let's go back to letters and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Here's a letter from Kathy who says, welcome back, Alan. Thank you very much. For me, the whole thing has moved beyond sexual assault. Yes, moved beyond that. Even if I accept every single word that the GOP said in that exhausting hearing, I still come back to three undeniable conclusions. One, Mr. Kavanaugh said that he does not respect and cannot be fair to anyone who is a Democrat. Two, Mr. Kavanaugh has a temperament completely incompatible with the judiciary. And three, Mr. Kavanaugh lied under oath about his relationship with alcohol and about his yearbook. Now we compare that to his other testimony. It is hard to not draw conclusions about his relationship with truth. And that's from Kathy. I saw you squint when I read the first one, Sarah. Which is, it says that he does not respect and cannot be fair to anyone who's a Democrat. Well, he certainly went after the Democrats and the Clintons and said it's a Democratic plot to get him.
He absolutely said that. And he made, again, as partisan as possible. I mean, it went back to his days of being staff secretary for President Bush.
And one gets the feeling that this was stuff that had been ordered up by himself, by the President of the United States, because it's the stuff he always says.
It was right out of his playbook of deny, go after the purported victim, become the victim yourself. This is the way men fight sexual abuse and sexual violence charges all the time.
And be loud as possible and then talk over everybody.
Right.
I think it's just, it was antithetical to a judicial temperament, which I hadn't thought about it in that clear of terms, the way that caller or listener put it, but framed that way, I mean, it stands in stark contrast to an even judicial temperament.
And Richard says, number of Senate votes needed to confirm, this is for you, Sarah.
Uh-oh.
Okay. panel, although it only requires 51 Senate votes to confirm a Supreme Court nominee today, I heard there was a time when it required 60 votes. When and why was the number of votes needed to confirm reduced from 60 to 51? What would need to be done to put it back to 60? Now, this, right, Sarah, goes back to the nefarious, if that's the right word, deal that was made by Harry Reid in order to get the Democratic candidates through. They changed. This was the so-called nuclear option.
November of 2013.
That's right.
Well, yeah. that's different than the nuclear option. So there was also the April 2017 change where the rule on filibustering was changed. So that's the number between 51. So yeah. I think we're conflating two issues.
No, you're exactly, I was, and I was wrong. You're exactly right.
And I've been trying to sort it out in my own mind during the break, but that certainly the Senate could change things.
Oh, yeah.
That's their rules. Right. They get to decide what their rules
are. But you will remember that the Democrats during this were warned by the Republicans, you'll be sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Ellie says, panel, will somebody leak the FBI report if the White House covers up the findings? Well, you know, leaks are convenience. Some people, sometimes you see these leaks, sometimes you don't. I keep wondering that about the Mueller report. Will somebody, you know, get it out there? If he fires Mueller now, will Mueller release everything one way or the other that he has ascertained? I suspect not, but I don't know.
I think the lack of leaks from the Mueller investigation shows the gravity of what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see leaks because people feel like it's part of their duty to the country to share the information. And Mueller has somehow developed a norm among his team that holds that in check. And I can only imagine it's because they know that the country is at stake. What they're looking at is that important that they know that they need to hold it tight for a while.
And really as tight as possible. I mean, mm-hmm. to think about it, in the last 18 months practically, as you know, as they've been going through their work, you haven't heard a single thing from them.
Extraordinary. Okay, so that answers Ellie's question. And now we go to Don, our friend Professor Don, who says, double standard, but Brett Kavanaugh's partisan outburst at the Thursday hearings was unprecedented in the history of Supreme Court nominees. Donald Trump called Kavanaugh's performance powerful, honest, and riveting. It's true. Had Dr. Ford delivered a similarly partisan and angry performance, Trump would have described her as a nasty woman.
That's right.
Who was hysterical.
Who was under the influence of her menstrual cycle. By ignoring the credibility of Dr. Ford's testimony and backing Kavanaugh, the Republican members of the committee and Trump are applying a double standard when it comes to sexual abuse of females. We have not come nearly far enough since the Anita Hill era. Shame on the Republicans.
Absolutely right. If she had done the same tact as Kavanaugh, she would have been branded as an hysterical woman and not believed at all. And just, I mean, that would have been it.
Yep.
My level of respect for her during that hearing was unbelievable.
She was great.
Roger, you know, I got the feeling, by the way, that in the beginning she said she was terrified. I think she was terrified. Mm-hmm. But by the time it was over, there were occasional sort of times when you would see a slight smile on her face. She really had become acclimatized to the whole thing. Roger says, Kavanaugh, Flake, Collins, and Murkowski. Good morning, panel, at the beginning of an historic and tumultuous week in American politics. While it is highly unusual to contact a senator from outside one's own state, this is a highly extraordinary time. For that reason, I have contacted Senator Flake, strongly supporting his insistence on an FBI investigation about Mr. Kavanaugh, and to vote against the nomination when it comes to the floor. I've also contacted Senator Collins and Murkowski to vote against Kavanaugh. This is far more important than Kavanaugh's conservatism. Do we want a man who has obviously lied and been very evasive under oath, revealing a lack of integrity and character as a lifetime member of the Supreme Court? The American Bar Association, I'd love you to talk about this, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
The American Bar Association, a nonpartisan group, actively supports this investigation. For lying under oath, Mr. Kavanaugh could be disbarred. I would urge others to also contact these senators about this important issue. Now, it's a very good letter. Because I think a lot of people have said, okay, I'll pay for the phone call or I'll pay for the telegram or I will do this. I think probably there are more people writing to congressmen out of their states as well as in their states now than ever before. But Sarah, perhaps you could talk a little bit about the importance of the American Bar Association, who went out of the way in the beginning to give him an extraordinary send-off about how wonderful he was. And then, boy, their brass must have heard an awful lot from their membership to turn around the way they have.
In the middle of the night. I mean, I mentioned it Friday morning because it was so astonishing. And then I jumped on a New York State Bar Association call where I'm the co-chair for the Committee on Immigration Representation, where we were trying to clarify the boundaries of whether or not we could support, you know, particular policies with respect to representation for immigrants. And that conversation took like an hour, just about like the boundaries of our participation in the political dialogue, for a state bar, for the American Bar Association to be able to overnight basically override every single, I haven't read their policies on political statements, but they had, it's extraordinary that they would do this.
I was watching morning TV this morning, and they, I think CNN put Article 201 or something like that, 201.1, on the air, and it really speaks specifically to temperament and to judicial temperament and what you have to do to be confirmed.
But let's not forget, though, you know, there are at-risk Democrats that people still need to apply pressure toward. You know, Joe Manchin, Heidi Heitkamp, and even Joe Donnelly, even though Donnelly said he would not support the Kavanaugh nomination, you still need to apply pressure to Democrats that are looking at these really contentious elections in the midterms.
And so those guys, right, Joe, are praying that this never gets to the floor.
Right.
But, you know, they are wusses. And
put country before self in all of these circumstances, because otherwise you're going to get voted out either way. I mean, if you vote for this candidate, the women will revolt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we are revolting. That's it. So time's up. Do the right thing. Put the country over your own career trajectory. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to retire.
And Heidi Heitkamp has to put women above her own.
Right.
I mean, she is a woman. And even Kellyanne Conway came out yesterday to say that she was a victim of sexual assault.
Well, are you giving her credit for that?
I am giving her credit for that.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it's not an easy thing for women to talk about.
Yep.
And this, and Kellyanne Conway in this administration working for the groper-in-chief, I mean, it probably wasn't easy, although I think it did give the administration a little bit of cover.
And she, by the way, was doing, the reason I asked you that question is that the argument that she was making was in favor of the nominee. So, you know, what throwing that in did for that argument, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I didn't give her any credit because, in fact, she wasn't going to say, therefore, we shouldn't get rid of, we shouldn't approve this guy. Quite the opposite. She wanted him approved, and she was throwing that in to have her credibility enforced.
But she also said that women need to be listened to, which for her, I think, was an amazing statement.
Well, but Libby, don't you think she's reading the polls? Don't you think that that's exactly what is scaring the hell out of all of them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They know they're losing the women. That's what I don't understand here, that aren't they reading the polls? Isn't the GOP tracking on any of this? Because they are losing women in droves now. I mean, I talked about women not liking what was going on with kids at the border. This, and it's so close to the midterms, they're not going to forget this.
Well, they lost on Anita Hill. Remember that we lost on Anita Hill, and they figure, well, okay, that's not going to change. It's going to be the same thing. Did you have something to say?
We were late for break.
Okay, bye.
Does that mean we're going to have one?
Yeah, we have to have one.
Okay.
Because Ian's in there. He's got a newscast. He's ready to go. So we'll do that. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. We'll have more topics. And we'll remind you about the lockbox as well.
I was going to say, there's nothing more important right now.
WAMC.org to help out before you even hear a little spiel. WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Joe Bonilla, and Libby Post making up the panel. And we welcome you this morning. All right. So let's talk about this story. In shelters from Kansas to New York, hundreds of migrant children have been roused in the middle of the night in recent weeks and loaded onto buses with backpacks and snacks. for a cross-country journey to their new home, a barren tent city on a sprawling patch of desert in West Texas. Until now, most undocumented children being held by federal immigration authorities had been housed in private foster homes or shelters, sleeping two or three to a room. They receive former schooling and regular visits with legal representatives assigned to their immigration cases. But in the rows of sand-colored tents in Tornillo, Texas, children in groups of 20, separated by gender, sleep lined up in bunks. There is no school. The children are given workbooks and that they have no obligation to complete. Access to legal services is limited. These midnight voyages are playing out across the country as the federal government struggles to find room for more than 13,000 detained migrant children, the largest population ever, whose numbers have increased more than fivefold just over the last year. I'll go to Sarah on this, who is in the front lines. And although the number of children here in Albany is limited, correct?
It's hard to tell. We only know those that come forward seeking legal assistance, and those are the ones that come on our radar. And because census data wouldn't necessarily be completely accurate with regard to these children, because census data only tracks the foreign-born population, which also includes United States citizens, it's very, very difficult to pin down that number regionally. I know that there are some good folks out there trying to put together some estimates, but I think it's safe to say that in this climate, people are going further and further undercover, especially when this administration is doing things like detaining undocumented parents that come forward mm-hmm. to claim their children, or undocumented relatives who are here. That limits the pool of people who can take care of these kids.
So if you are coming to pick up your child and you come forward and you are undocumented, then they will take you.
That's what's been happening most recently. So this number is inflated by this administration's policies.
The other thing that I was struck by this article is that the average length of time that the children are spending in custody has more than doubled.
Yeah, it's only supposed to be, and their justification for these tents, these camps, is that the children will only be there for weeks at a time, and that they're freeing up space at the HHS shelters for kids that need a longer term stay. And so they're shuffling these children around and etching numbers on belts that they're all wearing. It's just a recipe for disaster.
So it opened in June. It was supposed to close shortly thereafter. Then in September, they now say to the end of the year, right?
When it comes to immigration, nothing ever happens the way that they say it will. Right. Ever.
Do they mean it to, do you think, or are they lying up front, or?
Sometimes. I think with this administration, definitely. Nielsen was outed last week, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Basically, a memo was unsurfaced, and I think I mentioned this before, saying that the family separation policy exactly was intentional. It was intentional, no matter what they say. That was part of the plan for deterrence purposes. And you can't, when people are fleeing for their lives, there isn't an amount of deterrence that will keep them from coming to a safe place.
So help me with this question. What's wrong with doing the work that needs to be done and allowing the kids to stay in the situation that they're in, foster care or whatever?
It's worked imperfectly. For a number of years,
but it's better than a tent city, right?
Certainly. Yeah. And I mean, again, there was a program under the Obama administration that paired children and women more typically with social workers. And it had an over 99% effective rate in terms of getting people to come to immigration court. This mess and what they're doing is putting pressure on Congress so that they can have one more thing to blame on Congress so that they get out from under it and say, this isn't our fault. This is all the liberals in Congress. That's exactly the playbook here, because the sad reality is that we don't care about these immigrants. And every new wave of immigrant that comes forward is the low person on the totem pole in terms of public opinion. That's starting to change, and it requires us all to continue to raise our voices. But that's the sad truth.
And this is Stephen Miller.
Yes.
This has got Stephen Miller written all over it. I mean, he hates anybody who's not white. And, you know, even his rabbi, his former rabbi, took him to task for his politics and over the high holidays. And, you know, he's the architect of these policies. He's the one who is constantly putting anybody who's an immigrant, anybody who is of color and not a citizen, into these camps, marginalizing them. These kids are victims of sexual assault. We've been reading these stories all along. These are 13 to 18-year-olds.
That's what they say.
In unsupervised situations, this is
but
not
young,
a good...
younger yeah. than that.
And it's just not
well,
good.
I mean, every time that the Department of Homeland Security has told us anything about the groups coming to Albany, you know, it hasn't been accurate. I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see a full investigation of who is in those tents, how old they are, what their needs are. And they give workbooks, but what language are those workbooks in, you know?
Right. And if you're not looked after to complete them in any way, then what do you...
Right.
They're just forgotten, right?
And how could there be adequate supervision over that large number of children? We heard the reports last time around that DHS officers were drugging those kids, mm-hmm. that kids who cried were scolded and told they'd never see their family again. I mean, what's going on in there is way worse than...
It's torture.
It is.
They're torturing children.
And at the end of the day, we're going to pay the price, because then 20 years from now, 10 years from now, when these kids are going through, basically trying to resolve this trauma in their mind, we're still going to have to figure that out.
Well, but this is how you breed terrorism.
Right. I mean, precisely.
It's just that
precisely.
Simple. We went into Afghanistan. We shouldn't have been there in 1980. We did what we did. People got really angry. You know, Osama bin Laden, 9/11. Here you have all of these kids. These, you know, they're basically from Central and South American kids. They're being abused. They're being, you know, terrified. And when they're of age and they're back wherever they're going to be when they're of age, you know, this is how you breed terrorism in against your own country, is by treating people like this. And that's what's going to happen. It's it's heartbreaking to have to say it this way, but they don't care. The Stephen Miller and Trump, they don't care about the consequences of this, the long-term consequences. They want to see a white America. That's all they care about.
I want to get to one more story, and then we'll finish up with letters in the time that we have left. But but Siena College has a new poll out, and it shows Governor Cuomo way ahead, leading Molinaro 50-28%. Cynthia Nixon getting 10% on the Working Family Party's line. Other minor party candidates getting around 4%. Voters say Cuomo is better on 5 issues. Molinaro is better on corruption. Although I have noticed that in the recent ads, the Cuomo ads against Molinaro are showing that he is are trying to link him to corruption. Also, Gillibrand and DiNapoli lead their opponents by 32 points in this latest Siena New York poll.
What was interesting about the crosstab, especially for DiNapoli, is how many people did not know who he was. It was something north of 40%.
Didn't know who Tom was.
Yeah.
Well, you know. It's, I think, you know, that might be true, and, you know, but he'll get reelected. And what's interesting was that how the guy from Buffalo who's running for attorney general, who's running the ads now, what's his
Keith
name?
Keith Wofford.
Wofford.
Yeah.
And Tish James. They're only 10 points.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have a big problem with the attorney general being handpicked by the governor, many people feel, I'm one of them, should probably be somebody who would be critical, because the governor is surrounded by slime and corruption. There's no two ways about that. And you can not like it or not, but, you know, Joe Prococo and everything else. Mm-hmm. We had a letter here saying, how come you never talked about Joe Prococo being convicted? Well, I did. I wrote about it. I talked about it. People make stuff up that they want to make up. But in fact, you know, he and I have used those words, slime and corruption, many times. So there you go.
All right, let's go to letters.
Kellyanne's confession does not ring true, says Lee. She fully supports the man who calls all accusers liars. She lies on his behalf repeatedly. Why should we believe her when she said she was assaulted? She has zero credibility.
I believe any woman who comes out to say that it really isn't an easy thing to be public about.
Sarah, so I want to ask you a question as a very good lawyer. Do you think any woman has ever lied about being assaulted?
Well, I think that's the wrong question.
Well,
it's
my question.
Well, I think you can keep that one because I think that it puts too much attention on the victim, which we do all the time. It puts a magnifying glass on the victim when really what the process should be is if someone claims that something like that happened to them, there should be an investigation.
Well, I agree with that. I couldn't agree more with that. But I'm just asking you, you say every woman, you know, I mean, I'm concerned that we have seen throughout history people who have done bad things. They get mad at a divorced husband. They get mad at, you know, at a boyfriend.
It's the problem is that those incidences get blown up to a degree that undermines the women who have been. And many more women have been abused, have been victims of sexual violence, and have not spoken up because of the treatment we saw.
I completely agree with you. And I think you're absolutely right about that. Nevertheless, you know, you cannot say that. I mean, I think Sarah's point is extremely well taken, which is every accusation has to be investigated. I have no problem with that. I also know that throughout history, there have been, you go and look at the story of Joseph in the Bible, and you'll see it. You know, it happens that you're the daughter.
Okay, so yeah, no, so this is actually really important because that biblical story is about power and control. And so it's not gendered. Sexual assault is not gender specific. So framing the question, do women lie, just further puts us in this box.
Oh, I'm so sorry for examining the proposition, Sarah.
No,
apologize for saying to you, asking a simple question.
Come on.
Yeah.
It once again victimizes women. That's basically the bottom line.
So we should
victimizes women?
Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, continuing to frame the question around women's behavior.
No, I was not. I agreed with both of you. I think everything has to be investigated and the rest of it. I asked a simple question, and I will not be told not to ask a question by anybody.
We don't have. You might not like the answer.
Right.
I didn't get an answer.
Actually,
you told me not to ask the question.
Well, here, I rephrase my answer. My answer is that the appropriate question is whether or not people in power lie about sexual assault, either being victims.
You're not getting me to go there.
Or accusers.
I won't go there.
Or attackers.
I won't say.
The investigatory part of it is, will it be done without any kind of discriminatory whatever. You know, I mean, we have it right here. Look at the situation with Sean Morris and his wife. The police chief there, Pucci, right?
Yeah.
Is complicit in all of this. You know, he knows exactly what's going on. He didn't take Brenda's complaint seriously. He protected Sean. So, yeah, we can have all these investigations, but if the investigations are tainted because we all know women lie,
exactly.
Are you saying that I said all women lie?
No, I did not say that.
No.
Because I would resent that very
much.
Yes,
no, I did not say that.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. But the fact of the matter is that the conversation has to come away from, are there some women who might make this up, to the reality of women's lives and the truth that women live around the fact that all of us are potential victims of sexual violence.
I couldn't agree more, but at some point, lawyer Sarah, a wonderful lawyer, is going to get asked to defend somebody who is saying that the woman in the case lied. What are you going to do then?
Defend someone who says that the woman in the case lied. Any attorney's obligation is always to their client. Mm-hmm. And any attorney who's an officer of the court is obligated to seek the truth. So, you know, that's what we... try to do. But if women don't come forward, it doesn't give us attorneys very many options other than, you know, holding vigils or mourning the loss of our friends.
Okay, but I just don't like it when people put words in my mouth.
Nobody's
fair. Because I know what I said. Look, I've been more critical of Kavanaugh than just about anybody and all the rest of it, but it's an interesting discussion, and we should have interesting discussions on this show, in my opinion.
Always.
And I think you should have people on who, I mean, Sarah's a lawyer, I am not, but people from the DV community who can really talk to this much more expertly than I can.
Do you want more? Or we have
we're out of time.
Oh, I can't believe it.
We're out of time. All right. We're done. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back.